Since the pandemic started, it's the geeky, whatever the hell we feel like reviewing show. In this case, specifically, a property that I've been wanting to geek out with people about for like 5 years now.
Same.
The 2015 web series Haphead. And I am joined by my usual co-host, Crash and Burn. And on the other side, a friend of the show, fitness trainer, nutritionist, podcaster, actress, and star of Haphead, Alicia Kronheim.
That's me! Hello! But if you watch Haphead, it will be Alicia White, you see. However, it's me. It's me. Yeah. Rest assured.
This Haphead is a web series that, frankly, is, if nothing else, a perfect example of why the Canadian entertainment news show Innerspace should never have been canceled. Because I first learned about it on an interview there. And without Innerspace, this entire conversation never happens. Alicia and I never meet. There is so much stemming out of that 1 2-minute interview.
Was it only 2 minutes? That was so fun. That was like a dream come true, that interview. Like, my whole life, I was just like, I just want to be on the fucking Space Channel. That's all I want. I went to the best theater school available. And I was like, I just want to be on the Space Channel. They call it the network here in the US of A.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say we all miss the days when it actually was the Space Channel and, you know, cool.
Is it not anymore?
It's now CTV Sci-Fi, which basically, like, a lot of their channels is pretty much, we have the rights to this show, so we need to put it somewhere.
Got it.
It's great if you want to rewatch the same episode of Stargate SG-1 5 times a day.
I mean, fantastic. Yeah. Fantastic show. SG-1 is my favorite Stargate. However, maybe not the same one 5 times a day. That might be rough.
Right, just a little.
Mm-hmm. As usual, let's just take a look at the trailer for Haphead. And then we'll be back to get into the discussion / interview / probable ambient New York traffic noise.
I think they cleared out, but yeah, expect some more.
Yeah.
It drives me nuts to think you're going straight from school into some mindless job.
I'm pretty sure you mean my entry-level job in the video game industry.
Video games have to feel amazing, and that's where the next-gen haptic interface comes in.
So you're working in a games factory, but you don't get to play the games.
It is pretty cool, the way you can learn skills in a game world. I can't wait.
If they notice we're one short, whatever, we'll find it. But if not...
The player is going to feel every punch, just as if he were in the game world.
You don't much like Haphead posers around here.
I want you to quit that job.
Oh, no, Dad.
Yes, Stata, I want you to quit that job and have a summer being a kid.
I'm not a fucking kid. What the hell?
You best level up quick.
Can I freeze your assets?
No, I want to see the rest of this play out.
I know all the people with haptic cables, but I don't know you.
They call us hapheads. Society fears us as it always fears the new. But we don't care. The future belongs to us.
Haphead, if you really think about it in a nutshell, if you look past the gaming culture aspects, if you look past the smart-ass female lead, which is basically how you sell me on any property in existence, it's really, in a way, it's basically an example of why stealing office supplies from work isn't necessarily a good idea.
That's not where I thought that was going. I would argue it's a great idea. However, shit might hit the fan, but you'll learn some stuff from it. Whether it's haptic cables or post-it notes, steal from your office, people.
Oh, exactly.
You never know when it'll turn out well. You might end up.
Let's all go to the.
Becoming a millionaire after accidentally killing your clone father.
Exactly. That's what I keep telling people, and no one listens to me, Mickey. Help.
Fools.
All right. So, needless to say, Mickey will be sticking a image spoiler warning right before that line. Because I was going to avoid trying to avoid spoilers, but then I thought about it. It's like, I don't know how to discuss half the plot of this series without going into spoiler territory.
And it was 5 years ago, and you know it's not being promoted anymore. Nothing's happening with it. You don't even have to pay for it anymore. I just learned that it is free on YouTube. So I think. You know, it's like talking about like the ending of Hook. Like if you haven't seen it, doesn't really matter. You can go watch it if you're interested by this conversation.
Yeah, and as much as yes, it's free on YouTube, we don't actively encourage piracy as much as on this show we do tend to do it out of necessity and having absolutely no budget. But in this case, fortunately, I already have more copies of this thing than can possibly be healthy.
This is a Blu-ray unopened because I don't know how to play a Blu-ray.
over here we have the DVD. I have it on digital.
Let me just go ahead and photograph that. Oh, wait, I covered mine. I'm stupid. I don't know how to do a screenshot on here. Nope, I did it. I did it wrong. Doesn't matter. Bye.
we'll pull something out of the video later.
Sounds good. Hope it's edited.
But so yeah, basically, Alicia stars as Maxine, an 18-year-old gamer who has just gotten a job in the gaming industry, and by gaming industry, I really mean the factory floor at Asterisk Industries, doing quality control on newly released haptic cables. In the year 2025, the special economic zone of Hamilton, Ontario. Mm-hmm. And by special economic zone, I basically mean work rules. What are work rules?
It's where all the plebes go.
Yeah, it's pretty much, we know you desperately need a job, so we're going to pay you whatever we feel like, and there's nothing you can say about it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And the way 2020 panned out, like, well, that might be 2025, you guys. I'm pretty sure that Haphead is the Simpsons, and we just predict things.
Yeah.
Well, that was actually the thing. So going into this, Mike didn't tell me anything about it, and I hadn't watched it at all. So I didn't know what on earth I was going into at all. That was quite possibly one of the most organic and direct science fiction futurist things I've ever seen, where it's just like, no, all of this makes complete sense.
Yeah.
I can see it right now. I those zones already exist, not in Canada, but they exist in other countries.
It's the caste system.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The techno caste system.
Yeah, and I think that's also...
By the way.
Hmm?
Thank you so much, by the way. I mean, I didn't write it, but I certainly believe in it.
It was fantastic. And the I really liked how it swerved so hard.
Yeah.
I was expecting it to be a Black Mirror episode, and then it turns into crime.
Twists, mystery, murder.
Yeah. And I mean, unlike so many big Hollywood sci-fi properties, the fact that this is near future and doesn't date itself. Because, I mean, right now, technically, if one of the properties that I grew up with as a child were accurate, we would this year be marking the 15th anniversary of the death of Optimus Prime.
Oh, no. That would be terrible.
You have Blade Runner, which is set in 2019. They got that a little bit wrong.
Ish.
Yeah, kind of. There are enough noodle stands, so I'm happy.
There you go.
He got priorities out of it.
The 87 Transformers animated movie starts out with the famous "In the year 2005. Again, a little bit off the mark.
You don't know that it wasn't accurate, though. You aren't everywhere at all times.
I mean, there is that.
There are secret robot alien societies out there that you're not a part of. And I'm sorry to be the bearer of bad news here.
I just want to be involved. Jeez.
I get it, but like, you gotta pick and choose, you guys.
Oh, yeah. And to be perfectly honest, if that is true, I will be so happy.
I mean, same. Yeah. I would actually watch this terrible sounding movie if I did find out it was true.
But to get back to Haphead, you know, the thing we were actually discussing.
Oh, yeah. That's
now, not only do you have a wonderful kind of low-key sci-fi property here, you have the crime element, but also, if you enjoyed Veronica Mars, I'm going to tell you right now that Alicia and David Strauss, who stars as Maxine's father, Simon, have such a textbook Veronica and Keith Mars vibe going on pretty much the entire time.
That's amazing.
It's like, I said, I had actually just rewatched that Innerspace interview last night because, frankly, as soon as I found out that Innerspace was being canceled, me and a buddy went all through YouTube and downloaded every single Innerspace clip we could find. And when the Haphead creator specifically mentions Veronica Mars, I'm just sitting here going, yes, thank you.
I'm so glad that sentiment translates to the viewer and it wasn't just in the idea of the creator. That's great.
And another thing that I connected to with it was, oddly enough, actually, Batman the Animated Series. And believe it or not, I can make this work.
All right, I'm waiting.
Now, there was a two-part episode where I can't remember what the name of it was, but there was this AI called Hardak that was replacing key people with android doubles. And these androids basically would consistently get found out because they only had certain programmed responses when they were interacting with people. And when we're introduced to Simon's clone, it's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. I don't know the specific episode that you're referencing, but yeah, I mean, it's like a person's experience shapes who they are. It shapes their personality. You can recreate DNA all you want.
Yeah.
You can have a carbon copy of someone, but that experience isn't there. Even if you're able to incorporate memories, if you're thinking about it, I'm a scientist, as you know, even if you incorporated memories, the lessons from them and like the way you felt or the way the person felt during those memories, those translate into changing your actions or, you know, just adjusting. So a clone could never 100% like fool someone because of that, because there are nuances that are impossible to replicate, I think.
Oh, absolutely. And as is demonstrated with Simon's comic, a clone is not going to be able to pull off imagination either.
Right. I mean, a clone is a baby.
Yeah.
A clone is a baby in a human's body. There's no passion for the art there. Like, where did that passion come from? Did it happen genetically? Was he born with it? Or, you know, did he stumble upon it when he was 14? Who knows?
It was definitely very curious the way that it almost shouldn't have worked to have a character so completely change between scenes. It should have felt clunky, but it didn't feel clunky. You kind of fell in with the mystery of it, and you ignore everything that is like, no, they couldn't have gotten the tattoo completely removed. No, he wouldn't be acting this bizarrely. This is a completely separate person. And watching it, having no sweet clue what was happening, it never occurred to me.
Good.
So you fucking got me on that one.
Fantastic. I think it helps that they had just had a big fight.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, the next time you talk to someone after you fight with them, it's always awkward. And, you know, Maxine, after that fight, she goes and she sleeps with her haptic cable, and she does something outrageous that she said she wasn't going to do. So she shouldn't have put it past her dad to also do it. So it gives like a reason to believe it.
It made complete sense once the reveal comes. Up until then, you're like, what is with this movie? Like laying clues and then forgetting the clues. No, it's not forgetting them. It's just waiting, laying in wait until it can get me.
And also Maxine has the line where she's talking to Princess about how she thinks her dad has like sold out and gone into this depression because of it. So you've also got a perfectly reasonable cover story to tide you over until that reveal comes.
Right. And that scene, I believe, happens like right after. Right?
Pretty much. Yeah. I think in terms of the original web series, at this point, we're about episode, I think, maybe three, maybe four.
Right. But like that conversation with Princess happens soon enough after that you can immediately justify it to the watcher.
Exactly. And another thing, even just with the fight scenes, again, just the simple fact that I know like you did all your own stunts, which I said this at the time, but again, respect.
I mean, thank you. I watch clips of it now and I'm like, wow, I had no idea what I was doing, but that's only because I know better now.
So yeah.
I'm glad it's translating. Cause like I see my silly little punches, and like now I know how to box, and I'm good at like parkoury things and stuff, but I hadn't hit that stage in my life yet.
Yeah.
So I see it now and I'm like, girl, what are you doing? Who believed this? Who in their right mind believed this?
Yeah, but, like there was really, I think, only one moment in the entire thing, in terms of the fights, that I had any kind of a problem with. And it was one of the in-game sequences where we see you punching, but you're coming around like this.
It doesn't make any sense. However, that can be justified because Maxine has never fought before, and she's using the game to learn.
Yeah.
So yeah, like, if we got to do a season two, which is obviously never going to happen now, like we've all gone our separate ways. If there was a season two, there would definitely be some more honing of those skills to be a more believably trained person who's been at it for longer.
And I think also to me, when I was rewatching it last night, I had the thought it was almost the rage equivalent of button mashing. I guess just after Maxine had a fight with her dad,
mm-hmm.
and obviously you're just trying to get the anger out. There's going to be no technique involved.
Yeah, totally. And like that was her second time even using it. Like she didn't. They got in that fight at the end of her first week working, so she didn't even steal the cable until like the latter part of that, the second half of that week. So she was still brand new. That was her second time using it. Second or third.
Yeah.
So just wailing.
And also just like in terms of your performance, if I remember right, you had like minimal actual fight training before that, right? Yeah.
Well, it comes off as more than zero.
Thank you.
Oh yeah.
Actually, the guy who plays the bad guy, Adrian Ellis, he plays the boss at the company. What's his name? Do you remember?
Geis.
Yes, he plays Geis. So he is like a black belt in karate. So he did all of the fight choreography with me, and that scene where I fight him. We were just like in that abandoned warehouse for hours and hours and hours, like getting all the shots. Like I have basic stage combat training. So I don't have zero fight training. I did take a few courses on stage combat in theater school. They were extracurricular because, you know, like I said, my goal was to be on the Space Channel. So like I want to be that femme fatale, that like tomboy heroine. That, you know, all those women that I've looked up to growing up. So I had that, but he taught me a lot of stuff. Like I pretty much only had the basic structure and like how to react. Like if someone throws a punch at you, how do you react? Like how much does that actually affect your face? Like how much do you have to turn your head to do it? That I knew, but everything else was I think I learned it like a week before.
Nice. And it just comes off nice and smoothly. Ooh. And particularly with the Friday night hap fight early on in the series, which Alicia, I'm going to apologize now because as much as I am going to play a clip, Whereby is being weird and I don't know if you're going to get sound.
Okay.
But there is one other bad guy who I want to highlight because he has one line in this clip that 5 years later just still makes me happy.
We don't much like half-head posers around here. New meat.
I'm not a poser.
I'm great. You're coming on Friday to prove it.
The Friday fight? I haven't had much time to practice.
But you best level up quick!
Poser.
Well, that was Jermaine Carty as Steve, mm-hmm. who basically, like, we all knew that one person in high school who thought that they were the absolute king or queen of the world. But
oh,
you
they still exist after high school.
I was just going to say, like, you're looking at them, it's like, as soon as you graduate, you're going to get one hell of a reality check.
Mm-hmm.
And that's basically Steve, except he looks like he's having so much fun that it's like, you're such a jerk, but I don't want you to leave.
Yeah.
And particularly his delivery on, but you best level up quick. I don't know why, but that line.
Oh, it's great. It's great. Yeah. He's a fantastic character actor. Since I just watched this, that clip like very recently, when I was watching it, I actually had that thought. Did you guys watch Letterkenny?
Yeah, fantastic.
I haven't personally, but
watch it.
Oh my goodness, fantastic.
I know.
Mickey, you could be Stewart if you wanted to.
Ooh, thank you.
You're welcome, especially when he's like big and tough and awesome. It reminded me of that, how all of their characters are like elevated. They all have like elevated characteristics. Like their defining characteristic is totally like blown out of proportion. So he totally had that like tough guy. Like who's that guy that like doesn't his mouth doesn't open when he talks, and he's McMurray. So he reminded me of that character McMurray. He's just so like brazen, and he just comes up to you and he says everything that he wants to say. And you know, when he leaves, he doesn't regret anything he just said. He's like, I owned that. I owned that room. And like no one wanted him there. But you're like, come back, McMurray. You hilarious freak show.
Yeah, it's more about the train wreck than the enjoyable train ride. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like so much of this show must have been written with a tongue firmly planted in cheek, because oh my god, he comes off like a Saturday morning villain.
Yeah,
you know, it's just no, you're not the villain from Power Rangers. You're those two idiot bullies. This is fantastic. I love it.
The henchmen.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. It's just you're incompetent in the best way. I love it. It truly is. Yeah.
Four brain cells and great vocal cords.
Oh, yeah. And then, of course, we had joining Steve is good old Hal the Hammer.
Mm-hmm.
Who, if I remember right, wasn't he a Toronto indie wrestler?
Oh, yeah. He's a pro wrestler. I believe he still is. I follow him on Instagram, but he was never a big like Instagram person, so I really don't know. And I deleted Facebook for my mental health ages ago.
Yeah.
Because fuck Facebook. Oh my god, there's no reason to be on there unless you're in like a Karen squad. but I believe he's still at it. I think he's like working his way up, and like, yeah. It's funny. I don't know what his like wrestling personality is, but on set, like filming an actual like show or movie, whatever, he's like, he doesn't really like feel confident in what he's doing. And it's like so cute. He's just this like giant, scary wrestler man. And he's like, am I doing it? I loved it. He's sweet.
Tore
my meniscus in that scene. For real.
Oh, that was your traditional knee injury?
Yeah. So if you watch that scene and you there's like a B-roll of so he comes at me and I brace, and the B-roll was my boot sliding across the ground, and my boot when we were actually shooting it, you only see the sliding part. You didn't see the part where it got stuck on something and then my knee snapped backwards.
Oh,
so,
ow.
And it's actually something that I have been paying for years still. So,
I finished the scene. I literally couldn't walk.
Okay. So that fun fact about that scene, it was supposed to be a lot longer. And we got only very few shots because the pushing scene, that was an easier scene to shoot. So when we did it and I got hurt after like, you know, the first few shots, they were like, oh my God, can you still do it? And I was like, yeah, I'll try. Just like give me a bunch of Advil and like an ice pack and stuff. I could not put any pressure on that leg. And they shot a lot of the scene like waist up, but you can see the fucking pain in my face. Oh, that was rough.
But yeah, no, the pained look, you could notice the pained look, but the fact that you're also the characters in the middle of a fight meant that it works.
Yeah.
I'm acting really well.
I mean,
thank you.
Like definitely so.
Like that was a real response, shaving the back of my head in one shot.
Ooh. Yeah.
That was stressful.
And such an interesting, like, okay, we're done.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was rough.
Yeah, and with the fight, it's not just that it works, but it's kind of goes toward the fact that Maxine is quite literally fighting someone like three times her size.
Yeah, and I was pretty little then. I didn't have any muscle on me.
Well, and I mean, also just simply, just from a personal standpoint, where like I'm 6'6", about 240, and
you're big. I didn't know you were so tall.
Oh yeah.
Oh wow.
And
Nikki, are you like 7 feet?
Ah, lass, I'm 5'10", simple, mediocre. I blend in very well.
Well, you and I could have very comfortable hugs, whereas if I were to hug this idiot over here, my chin would have to go here, or like I'd have to put my face on.
Oh no, you ladder or nothing.
Yeah. But
sorry, Mike. Continue.
Oh no, it's just, what I was just going to say was that my friend who makes Addie the Adipose's cosplays is half my size and MMA trained. So like she's basically Maxine to my Hellhammer, except I have no problem telling her I'm kind of scared of you.
So you should.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
You should be scared of her and you should feel confident to tell her that because
I have no problem very publicly admitting that I am twice her size and she could snap me like a twig.
100%. Size doesn't matter. It's all technique.
Exactly.
Because if we're referencing the scene specifically, like Maxine doesn't throw too many punches, like doesn't do anything crazy. It's mostly just avoiding until he tires himself out, which ends up, you know, not coming to fruition anyway because they were caught. But yeah, I mean that's the little rabbit tactic. Actually, that's the tactic that Stuart used in the club in Letterkenny when he beat up the drug dealer.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Oh, these beautiful connections.
I'm just currently watching that and I am obsessed and I love seeing all of this like amazing Canadian television coming out. Like Schitt's Creek, when I came here, 5 years ago, ish, and Schitt's Creek had just had their launch party for their first episode at the bar that I worked at. And I never watched it. I was like, ugh, like Canadian TV is usually so bad. And then I eventually started watching it and I was like, this is fucking brilliant. And now, you know, they're raking in all the Emmys. I really think that Letterkenny should get on people's radar a lot more.
Oh yeah.
Support that Canada love.
And also the simple fact that we have unusual connections being made between properties on this show. And for once, I'm not the only one doing it.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, my connections are just so different from yours because yours are like, oh, this like cartoon from the 80s that you could only see at 5 a.m. on this like on channel 3. Like, I don't know that.
Oh, no. And like, make no mistake, my brain will go strange places. And again, I would be the first to publicly admit this.
Right. That's why you're so fun to talk to. That's why people like you. Never change.
Oh, God, no. Lord, no. But to move forward a bit, we come to the actual theft of the cables, and Alicia then walks away.
I just wanted to show you Jack's licking his butt. Sorry, continue.
That's what the people are here for.
I know. Isn't that the whole reason we were doing this? I can't hog this all to myself.
Oh, no. I mean, of course, like whatever brings in viewers.
Exactly. Booty always does it. I want to do it for my own audience, but his audience is a fan. sorry.
But,
saying things. I'm sorry.
just with the scene where Maxine, Tara and Lars actually walk out with the cables, just that little touch of they're not hiding them in the backpacks. Like one of you is wearing them as a belt. I think Lars had the cable up his sleeve. And even with Steve walking by and just being like, no, check them real good. 'Cause again, he's a dick.
Mm-hmm. And note how they don't check the light-skinned women, even though, you know, her skin is a little darker than mine, but they don't check the light-skinned women. They only check the, like, pitch-black melanin heroes backpack.
Yeah. Well, I like how that also kind of had a reference later on at the mall. The mall economic gatekeeping, and they were just, well, isn't it curious that specifically, you know, it's the two black people and not the white woman.
Right. So people who are watching this, perchance this applies to our political climate right now, and you should give it a reach.
I don't see the connections at all. I am also blind.
Oh, okay. You know what? It's probably because of the blindness.
It might be the blindness.
We should look into it, but that's my theory.
Look into it.
That was tasteless. I'm so sorry. We should braille into it.
Braille into it. I like that. Just throw that into conversation casually and then act like everyone else is the asshole. No, just reel into it.
Like, I'm sorry. Are you not aware of blind people?
God, you're so insensitive.
You are a symptom cyst. Anyway, who else?
With that mall scene, I like that, like, this is where we find out what Maxine's insurance settlement was after her father died.
Yeah.
And it's not, hey, look, Maxine is suddenly rich. We need you to know this. It's just a tiny little graphic, and that's it.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, yeah. I like that too.
It's the subtlety of stuff like that in this movie, this show, whatever it is. I saw it as a movie because I didn't watch it episodically.
It's better as a movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's those little subtle touches. The fact that not everything's overly designed to be noticed. Yes, you're supposed to notice it, but you notice it organically as it makes sense. At the beginning, you're playing on a white strip that is like a phone/video game thing. And mm-hmm. it's not overly designed. It's clearly just a piece of plastic someone handed you.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes them there. Yeah.
It looks kind of like that.
Yeah.
It does. Oh my God, nerd, that's amazing. Sorry, I'm listening.
So instead of over-designing something, which so many productions would, they were just like, does it have to be? Does it have to be something super complex to say that, you got some settlement money? No, it's two symbols. It's a 2 and an M. The restraint that went into this film really helped sell the extreme things in it, like the attack drones, the haptic second world itself. There is an economic zone in Hamilton, which means that people are working in Hamilton. That is the most unbelievable aspect of this whole thing.
I didn't even know there were people there. Apparently, the art scene is doing quite well, though.
I've heard that.
Mm-hmm. I haven't checked it out, but I've heard it. And thank you so much. I think a mistake that many, maybe sci-fi specifically, if I'm thinking back and, I've seen a lot of sci-fi, they do over-explain. And I think it is detrimental to assume your audience is stupid. And assuming your audience is stupid, sure, you'll reach a larger audience right away because everyone can pull something out of it that's good. But when you assume that they have a fucking head on their shoulders and they can read social situations and pick up on little things. I think that's when the magic happens with all shows and all movies, because people aren't going to be engaged if you serve it to them on a silver platter. It's too easy. They need to think to care.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And that void that you fill in with your own imagination also means that I didn't know that this was a 5-year-old film, show thing, whatever. It doesn't come off that way. Now, 5 years isn't that much. It shouldn't age it too well. It's not like you're throwing around like, oh, it's a good thing Hillary's president now. But
yeah, like we were talking about earlier, it's not dated in any way.
Exactly. And it's because of that restraint.
Yeah.
Things make sense and you just fill it in with whatever you're good with. And it's not going to date itself for like 30 years until it's like, oh, what is that, drone? That's adorable. You have to plug in? Oh.
You don't have a touch screen for your eyeballs. Lame.
I wish.
The writer, Jim Monroe, he has such like a wonderful creative mind, and he always just like he writes what he likes. He writes what he wants to see. And he doesn't write it for that that suburban family who doesn't know all of the little nuances because it's not in their world. Like they're not surrounded by I don't know, like the super left type people and don't like pick up on the little things. And yeah, and I think that's why he's still doing really well. He's never gone Hollywood. And he's never sold out, and he keeps making amazing shit.
Yeah,
he's awesome.
I hope all of the chances to him, because if he can do this with essentially a couple of sets, presumably this was filmed in Ontario, where it's set.
Yeah,
Toronto. Yep.
Yeah, if he can do this with just a couple of sets and some very minor video effects, such potential.
I will have to let him know. I haven't talked to him in 100 million years, but yeah, everything was just, it was very much a collaboration. Like the kitchen or the house where Maxine and her dad lives, that was our producer's house. And the like little hack space, the gaming hack space that Maxine goes in. That's just like this amazing little like studio. It is in that alley that you see. It's this tiny little studio. It's not a gaming hack space, but it's just for these techie experimenter type people that they happen to know. And they had so this was more than 5 years ago. It was 6 years ago.
Yeah.
The movie's 5 years old. We shot it way before that. They were like the first to get their hands on what do you call it? 3D printing and, you know, like weird little like laser things. And they just had all of this random awesome shit in there. And it was so cool. And we didn't really pay for our sets except for the warehouse. So yeah, it was a collaboration. Yeah. Everyone brought what they could. Everything I wore pretty much was mine. And, you know, obviously like every character has a piece that actor obviously didn't have, like the army jacket. And no, I didn't have an overgrowth bunny on a hoodie already, but everyone just came together.
I'll buy that sweater. That's amazing.
I love that hoodie.
Yeah.
I was like, please, can I keep it? And they wanted to auction it off to make money for a season 2, which never happened. Wow. And I have no idea where it is. And I love it. The hood is so big. And it's like a nice big hood. There's just
hide in there. It's great.
Yeah,
you can't buy them anymore, at least not online, which is so disappointing.
What do you mean? The hoodies?
Yeah.
Wait, big hooded hoodies or half head hoodies?
The hoodie that you wore, if I remember right, the production, they sent me the website where they got it from. That online store has unfortunately been empty since I think 2017.
That checks out. I didn't know. Yeah. So there's that.
Yeah. But yeah, literally the only reason that I'm not wearing my own actual hoodie right now is that at the time I just didn't have the money.
Oh man. I didn't know they did that. I would have bought one. I loved that hoodie so much. I have all these stupid hoodies over here, these idiot hoodies. God.
These hoodies, these are dumbass hoodies.
You're dumb, idiots.
a quick side note is the simple fact that this right here is probably the only Haphead cosplay in existence, which is something that I have been proud of for the last 5 years, including a bunny where I, honest to God, printed a still from the series just to get the bunny.
Really? Turn it around. Let me see your face.
And I don't know if I can move the hoodie around enough to really. I actually built the video camera sunglasses for when Maxine goes small. No, like when I say that I love this thing and nerd out hardcore.
Oh man.
I'm not kidding to the point that when you look this up on IMDb, and yes, I am bragging when I say this, when you go to the trivia section, I wrote all of it.
I didn't even know there was a trivia section. Oh my gosh.
I honest to God, one day a couple of years ago was just like, this trivia section is empty. I'm not okay with this.
Wow. Oh my gosh, I have to look at it after. Well, I'm actually going to really subtly pull it up on my phone right now. Because I bet you know more of the answers than I do. Oh, love this. I loved Haphead so much. It was it feels like a peak for me. Like I never wanted to like be famous. I never wanted to like, you know, hustle with acting. to like that detrimental point where people are just like spiteful and, you know, money hungry and just like constantly searching for, you know, their next thing that they have to do, and dealing with all of the fucking nonsense. There's so much nonsense in the acting world. Like, there are 100 million different people who look exactly like me auditioning for the same shit. And it's a chapstick commercial that no one cares about. Anyway, when I think back to Haphead, my heart is warmed. It is my favorite, my favorite thing that I've ever done on film, short films included, like, you know, everything. I love it so much. I love the story still. And actually, I didn't finish watching it, but I'm going to watch it after because I really like it. So I'm glad. I'm so glad that you still care about it 5 years later.
Oh, it just, you know,
brings me joy.
Like when I first saw that Innerspace interview, I think I'd gotten about 45 seconds into it before I was like, oh, I'm going to have some fun with this.
Oh, and that opening scene is good. I'm glad.
And yeah, like even 5 years later, it's still for me, it's still basically like it's the proverbial comfort food. Like, I am just as satisfied afterward now as I was the first time I saw it.
You're a big old bowl of spaghetti. It's fantastic.
It finally happened. I broke a guest. Also, as we were talking a couple of times about how you like basically you don't necessarily want to end up going to Hollywood, and there's things in this that Hollywood properties don't do but really should. Like for instance, when Maxine finds out about her dad's heart attack, just the simple fact that most big budget Hollywood properties, the actress would probably basically break down as soon as she got the news. But where Maxine has like this really tough exterior, you can see her just holding together. And then the moment when she looks at the pill bottle for the antidepressants that she'd been secretly giving her father and sees the warning label of not to give it to someone with a heart condition.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it really hits.
Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, I thank you for bringing that up. I really appreciated that as well. Because that was written into the script, that wasn't my choice. But if I think about it, like, if you get news like that, and then all of a sudden you're absorbing, okay, your dad's dead, you're completely alone now, you know, like, you just graduated from high school, you have this job, you're getting into fights at work. I think we all now know now kind of more than ever what feeling overwhelmed kind of translates to. And when you're absorbing all of that information all at once, like you're not gonna react to just like the one thing. You might not even have access to your emotions because it's so shocking. It takes some time to sink in.
Yeah.
And like that process time was something that I really appreciated when we were shooting, because that's how I would probably do it. Like I don't think I would believe it. I mean, one of the first steps to any kind of grief is denial, right? And some people may deny angrily, like some people who are predisposed to tempers or whatever, like extroverted folk would react loudly, but that's not how I would react. And that's also not how Maxine would react. And I really appreciated that attention to detail of her character. Yeah.
Yeah, and like again, you know, obviously, you know, you performed it, you know, very well, but it comes right back to that intentional restraint. It hits so much harder because you didn't really react to it. You reacted to it in a completely normal way that someone would, and especially the circumstances as they were seemingly were to that character. It actually like really hit hard. I don't even know why. I was just like, oh fuck. Oh, okay. So we're gonna have real characterization consequences.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. This is one of those things. Well then. It makes you pay attention to it in a way that isn't just, okay, I have to watch this. It's, oh no, this is actually like engaging and good quality.
Thank you. I'm glad to hear that people like watch it and consider those things. Like, I know that you guys watched it in order to interview me about it, or at least you did, Mickey. But I'm glad that those things that I held true are translating to someone who I don't know, someone who I've never talked to, someone who had never even heard of what the hell Haphead was. That's fantastic. I'm gonna send this to all of the all of the Haphead crew. It'll make them really happy.
Excellent. But also just to kind of keep carrying on that point, the sequence after that, when Maxine meets up with everybody at the Hap House, which, number one, I wish I could go there. I really do.
Oh, it's the Monkey Vault in Toronto. It is amazing. It is a parkour gym. They actually do have all of that stuff. And
okay, so hold on, because that definitely, there was definitely a moment where I did stop, and it pulled me out simply because it's like, okay, so is this a bar / a parkour gym? It is.
Yeah.
Okay. But I shut my mouth.
They don't. I don't know if they have a bar now.
They had a bar.
They didn't have a bar. However, it had just opened too.
Okay.
And I feel like it's something that, like, knowing the owners, things could have progressed in that direction.
Yeah.
It's a very Toronto inevitability.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, come on.
That classic Toronto inevitability. We all know about it, you guys.
You had an idea? Let's see if we can make it worse.
Also, what I was going to bring up was just what was done with the sound in that sequence, where everything is kind of muted, and like I could see where somebody, I could see where a viewer may not understand why, but to me it kind of came off as speaking to Maxine's numbness.
Mm-hmm.
She's still dealing with everything and just faking her way through all these interactions.
That's true. Even with her best friends, when she met up with them, it was like she was just looking for something to, like, she was just looking for an outlet. And then she had all of the outlets. So she was like, great, I'm going to have a shot. She's not legal yet. Like, I don't think she was much of a troublemaker, like much of a rebel as far as like substances go throughout, you know, high school and whatever. She went to all of these different outlets. She drank. She fought Ben. Does he have a name in the show? I don't know. She got into.
I don't think so.
She did a bunch of crazy shit with her friends, and there was loud music, and there was a shitload of external stimuli to keep her mind off of what was happening. It was 100% the thing that she needed in that moment, and yeah, you get to see it from her perspective. Yeah. That's a deep comment there on your part, sir.
Thank you.
And that whole episode was shot completely without dialogue. When it was episodic, it was entirely without dialogue. And the score was Adrian Ellis. And actually, my brother worked on a few things as well with Adrian Ellis for the score for that episode.
Very cool.
Cool, nice. Right?
Yeah. Ooh. I think one final element, Maxine's investigative skills. Which I just got such a kick out of, because we've made the Veronica Mars comparisons a few times, and particularly the skate park sequence with Wells. It's Veronica Mars if they had let Kristen Bell punch people.
Who says she didn't?
I hope she did.
Wells Wells is basically that character who ends up getting involved with the more criminal element almost by accident, because it's mostly just as simple as he has no idea what he's doing.
Because he's weak. If a strong person comes up to him and says, "I'm offering you this, you have to do this," he'd be like, "Yes, make me cool like you." Like, he just has none of his own gusto. So anyone who presents something to him, he's going to take it because he's such a desperate little wiener.
And I love that was the way that the character was approached, instead of like one note henchman or, oh, he's actually a secret asshole. It's like, no, this guy's just a secret loser, except it's not a secret. It made sense. Everything about this makes sense. That's it. Oh. Everything about this makes sense. I'm done.
Bye. I mean, as we get older, you realize how weak-willed even the coolest people are. Like, the facades don't translate or don't cover it quite as much as they used to when we were young and we took everything at face value. Now that we're old, we're like, oh yeah, a middle-aged man definitely wrote this because he knows what the fuck people do when they're making mistakes trying to figure themselves out when they're younger.
There's another thing that we've completely glossed over is that this is a movie that also occurs in the digital space, but the digital space doesn't feel like it's invading the film. Doesn't feel tacked on or misunderstood. Even the graphics of it haven't aged for being 5 or 6 years old. Everything about it seems so real.
Well,
it is.
when you bring up the video game sequences seeming so real, well, first and foremost, there was a moment where I think we've all seen the memes at some point of the level one character venturing into the level 50 area of the game. And at one point, we see Maxine actually do this because she's basically using the game to beat herself up.
Get the shit kicked out of her. What a great way of dealing with trauma. I'm just going to go over there and experience simulated shit kicking.
Also with that, like, I loved how at the very end of that, we see the prone form of Maxine's digital avatar, and then we fade to Maxine herself lying on her bed in the exact same position, which again was just like that nice little thing. Mm-hmm. And Mickey, you were talking about the reality of the video game sequences, and what I was going to bring up there was that as of 2017 anyway, Overgrowth actually is available on Steam.
Wait, that's a real game?
That's a real game.
It's an indie game from Toronto, and we actually, or like Jim and Tate, Jim the creator, Tate the director, and director of photography, they knew the guys who made Overgrowth. So it's a real game. It's 100% true to Toronto. In that scene, we just like pushed it forward a few years.
Well, that explains why it looked so well done. Like I assume that you guys had essentially put the entire budget into it, and it's like, oh no, it looks good because it's a real game.
Yes.
Yeah. Really? Okay, so I have a question for you actually. So we had some reviews, or like whenever there were written reviews about it, they talked about how the graphics for the game were hokey. However,
no, they look exactly like, all right. So first of all, the haptic stuff was supposed to be like prototype. It hadn't been
thank you
yet, right?
Yeah.
So of course it's not supposed to look finished. It's literally not finished. Second, if you've spent any time in an MMO, you know that this is how they look. The land looks good. The sprites look good. They don't interact 100% because they have to adapt for like 100,000 people at the same fucking time. No, I did not get that sense at all. To me, it looked like a perfect representation of playing an MMO. And since
I've never done, so thank you.
What the fuck? You know, it's just the truth. If 5 years later, I still look at that and go, no, that's obviously an MMO, but I assumed that you had just spent the money to have a fake one made. Kudos to the game designers. Kudos to the film for choosing to use that instead. And fuck the haters.
Fuck the haters.
Yeah, right. Frankly, because like, just to add on to that, for me as someone who's not actually a gamer at all, I'm kind of going, okay, number one, pretty much the first third of this thing or so is establishing that this technology is prototype. It's not quite ready yet.
However, this being said, the technology connects to any existing game. But the game was called Retro in the script.
Yeah.
So it is presented as a retro game because it was from 2015 and is supposed to be in 2025. So I was hoping that would save us. But some people were like, it's hokey.
No, hokey is Tron.
Yeah, frankly.
This is hokey. That's not what the fucking word means.
No, I mean...
I agree. Hokey's a sport on ice, and it's great. It's fun to watch. Right?
Okay. Yeah, like even back in 2015, it never looked hokey to me because I wasn't expecting the equivalent of the Xbox One in terms of graphics. Like, just no.
Well, that, awesome. I mean, yeah, I'd love to have a film and television connoisseur, addict, and a gamer to agree on that response. That's that justification right there. There we go. And I'm leaving. So I got it. Bye.
She's like, mic dropped. I'm out.
I'll come back. I'll come back just for now.
But this actually does really give me an opportunity to bring up a couple of complaints that I'd seen in comments where it's like, yeah, some of that, if you think about it for an extra 30 seconds, it still totally works.
Mm-hmm.
Like one complaint that I had seen was about how Maxine is not hiding her hap cut at all when the insurance person shows up.
She had just found out her dad died.
I mean, there's that, number one. I also tied it to the fact that they're following Maxine around with the surveillance drone afterward. And if I'm the insurance person and I've just done this interview where someone has denied being a haphead when they clearly are, I might want to surveil them.
Didn't they?
Oh yeah, like I took the fact that the insurance person saw the hap cut as why the drone is following Maxine from like that point onward.
Oh, yeah. I guess I didn't think of that angle. Like, granted, it certainly didn't help the case. But the fact that the life insurance policy was just opened, and then all of a sudden, like, his appearance changes, and then he dies right after, and like, there are a lot of red flags there.
Exactly.
And then seeing the shaved back of the head, like, oh, this is a fucking house of misfits. Like, this is like a crime ring here. I mean, there are so many reasons to surveil Maxine. And I think that that little hap stripe was a cherry on top.
Yeah. Like, it's just a little bit of a giveaway. Also with that, there's also the simple fact that this is a property where the insurance company has its own SWAT team.
Well, 2025, there's no difference between, you know, government, private, everything is just a big fucked up mess of...
That's the thing, that is... Like that company, a completely different company, but the company has a free economic zone. They clearly have armed, like heavily armed guards. They have the drones, which they can legally sedate an employee, and there's no retribution. There's no repercussion. The fact that the insurance company had their own SWAT team, oddly enough, just seems like yep.
Yeah,
there's that point where it's like you gotta maybe let a couple of things go, like just go with it.
What was that in reference to? Sorry.
I've always felt like it's an insurance company with its own private SWAT team. If you're able to buy that, but Maxine not hiding her half stripe, that if that's the problem for you, I have questions.
Right. Yeah, that's fair.
Like, if you're not going to call out the clearly more ridiculous thing.
Well, I might be putting my thumb in my ass here. But wasn't the insurance policy, okay, zip, rewind. At the beginning, when Maxine gets that job and then they're talking about the management position that his dad or that her dad didn't want, it was all still in like in the factory world. Yeah. So you can pretty like easily imagine that all of the factories in the special economic zone in this place where they lure the poorest people from all around to, you know, sign terms and agreements that, you know, they don't read, which allows them to be taken down by drones. Like, yeah. You'd think a militaristic world like that, the insurance company that is associated with the factory surely would have some kind of firepower behind them, because it's corrupt. It's not like it's State Farm.
Yeah, no, it's being run by the Hamilton Mafia.
Right.
Or maybe State Farm has an aircraft carrier. You don't know.
I don't know. And I want to. Why would you do that? Again, I just think about it always.
Yeah, like, and again, I'm just going, sure. I have no problem just going with this.
Right. I mean, if you if you believe enough of what you see, you're not going to care about the little things that you're like, because you know, you're watching an indie movie from 5 years ago. And even if you like it more than, you know, some big budget things that you've seen, it's still just a passion project. So you can suspend that disbelief for a couple things, I feel like, when you're watching something like Haphead versus, you know, a Transformers movie. Full circle.
There we go. And another complaint I had read was questioning a princess sharing the antidepressant meds with Maxine. And it's like,
why? Who? Wait, what was the complaint?
I think it was basically saying that it didn't make sense for Maxine to blindly accept these meds from her friend. And
this person has never done drugs before, clearly. Yeah.
Well, yeah, like I was just gonna say that number one, let's say that Haphead went the route that Sanctuary did, where that started as a web series that got picked up and went on to be a actual TV show on the Sci-Fi Channel. Like, you could refilm this, having more time, and add in little character details that would make that more logical. And secondly, yeah, I'm sorry, but two 18-year-olds would be sharing drugs.
Compare it to Adderall. Say, you know, your friend has an Adderall prescription. You're studying for an exam or something. They say, oh, here, take this. It'll help you, whatever. You're just going to take it. Like, your friend takes it. Your friend has
exactly
had it. There's no reason to not take it because she just assured you that it's helpful. Like, why wouldn't you trust your friend?
And, like, not only that, but the simple fact that when I was in high school, as someone who stayed away as far away as possible from drugs and could still knew where to go to get everything.
I sat in a bottle of drugs. Sorry, continue.
Like, no, I'm just saying, like, if high school me could find drugs and very easily, that moment between Maxine and Princess is, I'm sorry, it's entirely believable.
Yeah.
Plus, I don't know if you've ever had any rich bitch friends, but when a rich bitch friend gives you advice like that and then provides the thing, you always do it because rich bitch has done it and it worked out for them.
But last thing for me is, there's so many little things in Haphead that I wish bigger productions would do. Early on, right after Maxine is in the kitchen with her dad and Uncle Bruce, and you had the line, thankfully I like to sweat, and then cut to Maxine in her bedroom. And if you listen carefully in the background, you can hear her her dad and Uncle Bruce actually discussing the insurance fraud that they pull later on.
It's muffled. It's really muffled. And she, well, my cue was to hear it and just be like, classic dad, like, like, oh, lol. Way to pick up on that. I mean, obviously, if anyone was going to, you would.
Yeah, frankly.
You have the only cosplay to exist.
And at the funeral, another complaint that I just remembered somebody talking about was when Maxine says that her dad's death was her fault, Somebody complained about her saying that kind of loudly right at the front of a funeral. And I'm kind of going,
that's yeah. Like a... sorry.
No, that still makes sense. It's like,
it's survivor guilt. Shut up.
Yeah.
Survivor guilt. They had gotten into a fight right before it happened. And I'm sorry, are you going to say you don't believe every like child whose parents got divorced who blames themselves for it? Like, are you completely unaware of like the human condition and how we like justify things for ourselves and how we blame things for things out of our control? Like, I'm sorry that you've lived in such a bubble your entire fucking life that you need to be spoon fed. Yeah. But
this imaginary person who hasn't had any fun in high school and apparently doesn't know how humans interact.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Fuck them.
Idiot. But idiots like these stupid hoodies over here.
But also the moment toward the end of that scene with Maxine and the Sharpie.
Oh yeah.
When she
that was a one take wonder too. That was
nice. that was another just a nice little moment that's like I wish more productions would do this.
I mean, they probably do. You're just not seeing them because they don't have the budget. Because the people with the budgets have to follow more rules from producers and investors and stuff like that.
And just the basic studio interference, no doubt.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just like a whole bunch of noise I wasn't interested in personally. Which is why I never joined Actor and just kept doing stuff that I liked to do until I decided what I actually wanted to invest myself in.
For me, this is like, for me, like, obviously, this is, for me, my rating is just a full, just 5 out of 5. Like, I, of course, thoroughly loved every moment of this. It's unfortunate that there's not going to be a season 2, like, just because there are all these dangling plot threads with the Hamilton Mafia, why Maxine and her dad are not allowed to talk about Grandpa.
And they're on the run.
Yeah.
That, where the fuck are they going? I don't know.
You ended it with the promise of 7 assassins. Not one. Not 2, 7 assassins. Where are my 7 goddamn assassins?
It's because we wanted a season 2, but, you know, that's the problem with not having money. The benefit to not having money is doing everything you want to. And the downfall is, well, you need a strong fan base to donate money to you because there's no studio that's going to fund this.
Let's see. As for me, I give this all of the money that is going to be wasted on Ready Player 2.
Yeah, that's nice.
Yeah, this was a better version of Ready Player 1 because it doesn't rely on stupid ass references and the characters are believable, but you still end up with that same approach to a world. That same approach to corporate power taking over the legal aspects of a reality. But instead, you get humans instead of trash. Yeah. No, instead of spending even a fucking cent on watching or supporting Ready Player 2, go and spend the $10 to support this, and maybe, just maybe, there will be a cult status for it. That means in 20 years, it'll have a revival on HBO and way more money.
Oh, yeah. No, I would so happily take even that. Like, I've always said, if I ever won the lottery, the first extravagant thing I'm doing is funding season 2 myself.
Really?
I want it so badly.
I want it too. And you know what? I really miss acting, but I don't miss the scene at all. That, like the the acting scene. So I'm not interested in pursuing it, especially not in New York. But if I got to do another passion project from some like amazing benefactor like yourself winning the lottery, that would be just a dream.
Oh, yeah. No, like I would love to be able to just contact the production studio. Like, here's like a million. Go do what you need to do.
And I'm so much better at fitnessy, fighty things now.
It would make sense
to see her 5 years later, like having progressed, right?
Yeah.
Well, exactly. There's so much potential. You can come back to this at almost any time because of the way it was done, and just start right back up. Personally, I'm a little offended that he has said that he will give you money and hasn't mentioned anything.
We will hire you as a consultant.
Thank you.
Nuances.
Thank you. Fuck you, Mike.
Well, now if I could finally get to what I was trying to get to.
Oh yay!
Yeah, because fuck that movie.
I didn't see it. I mean it looked good.
It looks good, but it's entirely soulless. So this film and Ready Player One shared a lot of the same concepts and themes. You've got corporate power taking over legal power. You have the personal and the technology combinations. You have people who are trying to still live their lives and do what they intend to do, their schemes. Over an overarching surveillance state, plus the fact that you have a literal video game that you go into. But whereas you guys managed to have a lot of heart and soul and reality to it, it's just a collection of references to shit you can buy.
Oh, yeah. Gotcha.
With that to wrap up, first and foremost, stay tuned for our next episode, which will be the final official one of 2020.
Because the third time you said that, by the way.
But first one for this recording.
Yeah.
Next up, if I've got the release schedule more or less right, coming out in. Late December will be our discussion of 1987's The Untouchables, where we also end the year with our first drunk show.
Oh, right. Yes. Yeah. I was in the message combo about that. Well, that sounds joy.
I mean, if like film about prohibition, why would we not?
I mean, it makes a lot of sense. It's the government just holding you back, repressing you, and you acting out about it. I mean, topical as fuck, dude.
Normally, we're at this point, I would also be pitching my own stuff. Instead, I am actually going to fill in for Vita for a moment, since here in Nova Scotia, our second wave of COVID-19 is starting to ramp up.
Everywhere. All of North America.
Here it's just starting. There in New York, I don't think it ever actually really stopped.
The cases went down for a hot minute, but...
Okay.
New York's doing okay. We just have a lot of people, so the numbers that you hear... are like sort of out of context if you're comparing it to Halifax.
Oh yeah. No, that's
really.
That is not a comparison that can be legitimately made in any way, shape, or form.
Both of them have water.
Okay. Yeah, there is that.
Also, like there are plants somewhere for sure. And, I think people live in places like houses.
Less so now.
Yeah, the way things are going right now, that's getting more and more debatable. Just when you're on Facebook, there is an actual good positive use to Facebook, which is to do a search for Out of the Broom Closet. You'll see the image of the woman in a green witch outfit with the rainbow Doctor Who scarf, where you can message Vita directly to buy masks. And needless to say, now is more and more getting to be a really good time to get yourself some masks. And considering at this point, I have personally bought 6 or 7 from her, with at least one more on the way. I can recommend them very highly. She has roughly 140 different patterns, give or take. So she's probably got a design that you will happily wear.
I'll check it out. I've got 1,000 masks. I think all of your listeners and watchers should check it out too.
Absolutely.
Tell you what, I think all of you should go on Facebook and buy some masks from that green witch there.
And buy more, the more masks, the merrier. Because for the love of God, please mask up, for crying out loud.
Yeah, don't be fucking stupid. I mean, that's one thing that New York is doing right. You'll get, like, there are no anti-maskers here. Everyone is, like, really, really distanced. Like, it's a terrible place to be right now, but it's pretty safe when you go outside. It's pretty under control. And anyone who isn't following those guidelines is absolutely insane.
Yeah. Insane. Next up, Mickey, what do you got going on?
I wish I could say that I have stuff coming out this week, but I don't, because production takes fucking forever. But you can still find all of my archive stuff at patreon.com/herego. I have shot so goddamn much that I just have to get producing and...
You're gonna do great. You're gonna do so great. I'm cheering for you.
Thank you very much.
Get it, girl. Get it.
And finally, now that my stomach is telling me, for the love of God, dude, wrap up.
Yeah, dude. This has gone for too long. But it has been a delight. And actually, Chase just walked in. Hi, baby. Oh, my gosh. Hi. He just showed up with flowers.
Aw.
Hey, smile.
Well done, sir. Well done.
Can you see me smiling?
Such a big, bright smile. Oh.
What I tell you about New Yorkers, they're all wearing their masks.
Exactly.
Thank you, baby. I don't understand. I like to thank the Academy. I couldn't have done it without God and my family. We're closing off. He got mochi.
Oh no, there is no need to apologize for this whatsoever. I don't want a single second of this cut.
Nope.
I mean, what? Okay.
And for anyone newly dating or planning to date, take note of everything you just watched.
Yes, because I tell him repeatedly, don't buy me flowers, because then I just need to, like, pay attention to them while they die. But this makes me really happy. Okay, so if any of you guys want to find me, you can find me on Instagram at elysian.form, ELYSIAN.FORM. And my podcast, Muscle Spasms, on Instagram, muscle.spasms, we release a new episode every Friday. We just released one today with an American Ninja Warrior, an advocate for Bichette's disease. She just shot a reboot of an obstacle course show that I'm not allowed to say, but it's going to be so freaking dope. Overall champion. Anyway, I don't need to promote for her. Check out Muscle Spasms. It's on Spotify, iTunes, Deezer, Stitcher, wherever. And you can listen to some hilarious jokes. You can listen to me and my co-host, stand-up comedian and trainer, Mara Merrick, chat with some of the coolest people in the fitness, nutrition, and everything industry. And you'll learn a lot. You'll learn a lot of science, things that you can apply to your life directly right now, any day of the week, to just better your quality of life. So check it out. And we're really funny. I don't know if I mentioned
it. It might have come up a time or two, but I mean, it always bears repeating. I mean,
Michael, we're funny. Did I say that? We're funny. Shut up. Just because you buy me flowers, just come over and say hi to everyone, just really quick.
Again, this doesn't get cut.
this is my boyfriend Chase.
Hi, everybody.
Hey.
He's the one I'm taking to Florida with me. That's it. This has been a delight. That's all. He's got a big beard. He's got a rose on his shirt, and I got a rose in my hands.
There you go.
Yeah, look at that.
Wow.
It's beautiful synergy.
Yeah.
It is synergy. That's a very businessy word, and it works. It works. It works for me.